Hi, Donnie, and welcome back, listeners, to A Real Page Turner with Mara and Donnie.
Hello.
Hi. So before we start our final holiday episode, I wanted to take a minute and thank all of our listeners who have been tuning in and downloading our episode. You know, we have listeners as far as Hungary, New Zealand, Germany, Australia, the UK, and quite a few in Canada. So thank you to all of our listeners around the world. And if you're interested in connecting with us, please visit our Facebook page, A Real Page Turner, and we will welcome you into our group. So thank you, everyone.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate all of your listens and your open ears.
So tonight we're excited for this one. It is the movie A Christmas Story, one of the most popular Christmas movies. But what some people probably don't know is that it's based off a short story by Gene Shepherd. And that short story is called Duel in the Snow, or Red Rider Nails the Cleveland Street Kid, which is part of a collection of In God We Trust and All Others Pay Cash that was published in 1964. By Gene Shepherd, who was an American storyteller. He also did a lot of broadcast radio. And these stories were kind of semi-autobiographical stories about growing up in Northwest Indiana. Yeah. So Donnie, tell us a little bit about the movie.
Okay. Well, the movie is the greatest movie of all time, in my humble opinion.
Agreed.
I love it. It's not just my favorite Christmas movie. It is one of my all-time favorite movies, along with Jaws, which we already talked about a few episodes back. I'm very excited to record this one. Yeah, the movie, it came out in 1983. It was directed by Bob Clark, who probably had one of the most bizarre like filmographies of any director ever. Because before this, he directed another Christmas-themed film that is not all warm and fuzzy. It was called Black Christmas in 1974. He also directed films like Porky's and Baby Geniuses. So he was all over the place. But I love, love, love this film. It was written by Clark and Gene Shepherd as well, and Lee Brown. It stars Peter Billingsley in the role of Ralphie, and playing his parents were two veteran character actors, Darren McGavin and Melinda Dillon. Now, when the film debuted, it wasn't exactly a flop, but it was a pretty modest success. It was pretty well received by critics, but it was just the kind of film that kind of came and went. It wasn't an instant classic right away. But over the years, through VHS, eventually DVD sales and rebroadcast on television, it developed this huge following. And in the 90s was when Mr. Ted Turner made the decision to start broadcasting marathons on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, 24 hours showing nothing but A Christmas Story, where he pretty much said the law of diminishing returns be damned. And it kind of exploded from there. And it's had this turn into this phenomenon and become this Christmas classic. Yeah.
And I didn't really know this was based on a short story, but when I read the short story, I felt like it feels like when you read other well-known books and movies and you get a character in your head, like the narration and the voice is so strong in the short story that you hear the person who's narrating in the movie. And I think that's because of the voice of Gene Shepherd as a writer. It was very close to what he wrote in the movie. And it was really well done that you feel that same kind of nostalgia in the writing that you feel when you watch the movie.
Yeah. Like, it's funny when I was reading the book, just going through and finding like direct lines from the screenplay, like in the book, you know, so it was pretty that was pretty interesting, you know. And the one thing I loved about it was that, like, there were several different storylines, because it wasn't just the Christmas one about going for the about him wanting the Red Rider BB gun, like several other subplots, which in reading it, like, didn't have, you know, weren't necessarily like based around Christmas, but how they were able to take these stories and put them into make a coherent film about it. So it was pretty interesting there.
Yeah. And I thought when you were talking about direct quotes kind of that you hear in the movie that are in the short story, you know, I think one of the funniest scenes in the movie is when the mother's trying to dress them up and you see the brother go out and he can't hardly walk because he's in his snow suit. And they talk about, you know, the cold Indiana winters. And when I was watching the movie again after reading this, you know, one of the direct quotes was preparing to go to school was about like getting ready for extended deep sea diving. And I don't think I've ever picked up on that before in the movie. You know, it's funny, but you, without reading the words exactly, you know, like a lot of that dialogue kind of, you hear it and it's funny in the moment and then you forget about it. But when you read it and then you hear it, you know, I think it's even funnier and it kind of enhances that image you see on the screen when you hear it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it was like very descriptive there. And like, you know, they turn Randy into like, you know, looks like a scuba diver almost, and you know, with the just wrapped up and everything.
Yeah. And kind of the when I was watching the movie again and it opened with them in the window of the department store, I don't think before that I'd ever paid much attention to that scene until I started reading the story and how the story says how the window is where all the kids went to see, you know, it was like the big unveiling in the town of what they did on a Saturday night. And they described, you know, the seven dwarfs, Snow White, kind of the Santa Claus and everything that was in that window. And I had never paid attention to that before, probably because the movie was just beginning and opening that, you know, it almost is like a filler opening scene. But after I read this, I was like watching and, you know, Snow White is in it. So even though like the window seemed pretty, you know, true to how Shepherd described it in the short story. I think in this case, like I enjoyed reading the short story because it enhanced how I watched the movie and it made me appreciate things in the movie that maybe I didn't think about or notice before. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I've already gushed so much about this movie, but I really enjoyed the book as well. And yeah, and I just, you know, and I feel like they're just like good companions with each other. And I like really liked like how like the book had like so many different storylines and how the movie was able to like intertwine them, because the subplots were very much like not interconnected at all, because they were, you know, four different stories, but with the movie, like how they were able to take this these stories and put them into the Christmas setting. It's like there's one part in the movie, it kind of was like a microcosm of it, like when Ralph, you know, because it involves so many different running stories throughout the film. Ralphie is sitting writing his theme for class about how much he wants the BB gun. And then he hears his father and the Bumpus Hounds outside. The Bumpus Hounds are all, you know, barking and chasing after him. And then he comes in, you know, and the father's going, I won. And that's when he reveals that he won the major prize, which later turns out to be the leg lamp. And he starts celebrating. So like, you have like three of the four or five stories from it all kind of in together, how we have the Quest of the Red Rider BB gun, the Bumpus Hounds, and the father's major award.
And the dad with one the furnace. Together. Like, I think that's
true. Yeah.
Which is so funny in the movie. It's like, you know, his father's obsessed with this furnace and, you know, he talks about that in the short story too. So I think it's really funny. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. It is like a subplot, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
The other thing I really liked, and I don't know, Donnie, if you'll remember this because I'm considerably older, but I liked when he described the Open Road for Boys, that publication where he first saw the Red Ryder BB gun. And he says, its Christmas issue weighed over 7 pounds. Its pages crammed with the effluvia of the good life of male juvenilia. Until the senses reeled in avariciousness, the growing desire to own everything was almost unbearable. And I don't know if you remember this. I can remember getting the JCPenney catalog in like the fall when he's saying he got this one or the Sears one. and poring over the toy section and things that you wanted and circling them. I don't know if you had the joys of getting the JCPenney catalog for Christmas.
I am not that much younger than you. but yes, I do remember having catalogs and my sister and I going through the toy section. Yeah, and that was a Christmas staple. You would have, you know, we would do that. I don't know how much, probably did get most of it from Santa. We did from him.
It, the way he talks about it, you know, it's like so funny because it, you know, like I said in the beginning, it's kind of that nostalgic tone of, you know, Christmas has gone by. And, you know, the story starts off with him being in New York City and speaking to some woman who almost has like, she wants to have all like the guns removed from Christmas, which I thought was funny. And then he dives into this story of growing up and wanting as a young child, like weapons and guns and BB guns. And that's how he kind of launches into the story, which is interesting because I feel like the movie does that too, just with the overall narration, right? Like he's taking us back to a time, a Christmas in his childhood. So I felt like that really worked too. And I really liked that. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. And I actually, I did get a BB gun when I was a kid because of this movie. so I still have it up in the attic. So, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. I just can't say enough about both of them. But I did notice like the book, the movie does stay pretty faithful to the book, but there are a few changes. One of them that I found was funny is there's different presents with Aunt Clara, because in the movie, like kind of everyone knows what gift he gets from Aunt Clara, the whole big bunny suit. But in the book, it was just bunny slippers, which I thought very funny. And so like how like they kind of just enhanced that for the movie. So it was that was very interesting. And one thing I noticed is how the character of Grover Dill takes a much bigger has a much bigger role in the book than in the movie. And it's kind of like they flip-flopped, like Scott Farkas is in the book is only kind of mentioned in passing, whereas Grover Dill becomes the main bully, whereas in the movie that it's Farkas is the main bully and Grover Dill is his toady.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, when I watched this movie, you know, I've seen it a million times, of course, my least favorite parts are the daydreaming scenes. Like when he's fighting off the bandits and picturing himself with a BB gun, or when he's thinking of handing in that his theme to the teacher and getting an A and everybody's so excited for him. Like those are my least favorite parts of the movie. And I don't know why. I just don't like them. But when you read them in the short story, like they stayed pretty true. And so when I watched the movie again, I had a different appreciation for those daydreaming scenes. I was a little bit more tolerant because they were very close to what he wrote in the book and how he like thought these things were going to help him get his way and things that he wanted. But in the movie, they kind of just get to me. And I don't know why, but they do. But I enjoyed them more after reading the short story.
It's all part of the plan, I guess. It's that, but the movie does add like some things, like I don't believe the book has the flick getting his tongue stuck to the ball.
No, it doesn't, because I looked for that too.
Yeah, it doesn't. And the whole fudge scene. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have it either, which in turn, because that reminded me, because he said the daydreaming things, because they went on creating another daydreaming scene with him, daydreaming that he's turned blind from the soap that his mother made him suck on. So, you know, and I think like, you know, those, both of those are like pretty funny scenes. And I think just, you know, enhance the film, you know, because you have to add more in to movies, and I think they were good creative decisions.
Yeah, I agree because it does, you know, the overall kind of theme and feel of the story is consistent with what you see in the movie, and what they add in the movie just makes it funnier or gets you to know those characters a little bit better than you could in a short story.
Yeah. It's one thing that I thought about A Christmas Story that really stood out to me is how it kind of is this balance between Christmas films. And like, it's kind of like a middle ground. When I think about older Christmas films, like your Miracle on 34th Street, It's a Wonderful Life, like obviously they're classics, but they're very like serious films. They're not, you know, they're not that funny, and there's not a like you know, and they're more going for like the heartwarming side of Christmas. And then like after afterwards, like more recent, like in the last 30 some years, you have a lot of films that are like take like a cynical approach to the holiday, like Christmas Vacation, even Home Alone, maybe even like Elf to some extent, and it's more so about like, oh, how crazy of a time Christmas is, everything. And the Christmas Story kind of is that balance that you have that nice, like heartwarming nature to it, the nostalgia factor. But then like, it does not say like it takes a cynical approach, but does kind of like highlight a lot of like absurdities and the craziness of Christmas as well. So it's kind of like the, the bridge to connect these two like distinct styles of film. That was just something that I always thought of for years.
I actually never thought of that before, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. When you've seen this movie as much as I have, in my family, we turn it on for the marathon and leave it on. Even though it's the same thing over and over again, we will leave it on all Christmas Day.
Yeah, I mean, I'll leave it on anytime it's on. I put it on.
Yeah.
And then I know we wanted to mention that Gene Shepard himself was actually in the movie.
Yes, he is. In the scene where Ralphie is going up to see Santa and he kind of cuts in line to approach the stairs, Gene Shepard is the man who tells him that the line ends here. It begins there, where the line stretches all the way back to Terre Haute. And also, the director of the film, Bob Clark, makes a cameo as well after the father has gotten his major reward, the leg lamp, and is out on the street looking at it. The man who approaches him and asks what it is and says, "That looks like a lamp." That is the direct Clark.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but overall, like, and I really like the father. I think he's my favorite character, or the old man.
Yes.
Darren McGavin, I loved in this role. Like, is that because he was older? I believe he was in his 60s playing this, and he's like supposed to be a father of like two young boys. So like, and he's kind of like more like age-wise could have been their grandfather. But I think like it's still like believable. And I think he just plays a great part. And I love his facial expressions, like especially after he sees Ralphie in the bunny suit. And I remember years ago when he passed away, I was watching the Oscars and they included him in the in memoriam section, and they showed a scene from A Christmas Story. I was like, because it was probably like hands down his most famous role. It's like that and the dad of Billy Madison he was in. But yeah,
and I have to wonder, like, do you think that Gene Shepard, when he, you know, obviously when he wrote the story, he probably didn't think this, but when he was writing the screenplay and they were working on this, do you think he had any idea it would become a cult classic and you could buy light up leg lamps and, you know, t-shirts with Ralphie the bunny suit on it, or that people would be going around saying you'll shoot your eye out for like the next 50, 60 years? Like, I have to wonder, like, did he have any idea that he probably didn't, that he was writing something that people would quote for years and have merchandise everything?
Yeah. Cause it even like I said, it took a while for development to this classic. And, you know, like, yeah, it's just gone, you know, above and beyond what anyone thought. And I've seen like retrospectives on the movie and like interviews with the cast and that, and they, like, and they're all kind of shocked at it. I remember like Peter Billingsley, who's kind of done more behind the scenes work. He's done a lot of like producing and directing and a lot of things. He's big. He's friends with Vince Vaughn and kind of produces all his movies and that. And I remember seeing an interview like they talk, because like he was kind of a success story with in regards to child stars. And he said one of the things that like helped him and that like he didn't like kind of go down the path of, you know, a lot of child stars go through, is that A Christmas Story wasn't an instant success, that he kind of made it, it came out and it was whatever. He didn't become like, he didn't have the spotlight on him immediately. And then it wasn't until years later it became this classic, and he was already like in his 20s and an adult. So it was, you know, so that kind of helped him not have a treacherous path after this film.
You know, it's funny because when you read about Gene Shepard, like he didn't really want this called A Christmas Story because he thought it was, like you said, like almost too wholesome. So I know you're talking about the balance, but it's not really the title that he wanted. He wanted it something that was a little bit more dark, or because he is kind of, you know, when you read some of his works, he is very like sarcastic and hyperbolic, but he, you know, he didn't really want it called that. He wanted it really just, you know, called something that wasn't so, you know, schmaltzy, I guess.
Yeah, well, a little schmaltz is not, can't hurt.
No. And I think you get that sarcasm in the movie, right? Like, it's not just all rainbows and unicorns. You know, you get that it's sarcastic, that he is, you know, reflecting back on things that were funny that did go right.
Yeah, exactly. Like a lot of the, it's kind of like the theme of the film is like just things not going right. The mother breaks the leg lamp, you know, Ralphie shoots his eye out. He gets a C+, which is another very big difference between that. Because in the book, his score on the theme, or his grade on the theme is a B, which I think I like the fact that it changed it to a C+, because like a B's like, you know, yeah, like Ralphie probably expected an A, but a B's like not that bad of a grade, that like C+ really like drives home the point, you know, home how disappointed he was in the grade. So I think that was the right change that they made. But yeah, it's the film just kind of like, you know, embodies the, you know, how things aren't perfect. And just because it's Christmas, it's still, things do go wrong. Just got to have the right spirit to it.
Yeah. Well, great. I love this one. This is like one of my favorite movies. And I'm so glad we're wrapping up our holiday season extravaganza with this one.
Yes.
And so we will not have a new recording out on Christmas, the weekend of Christmas, but we will be back wrapping up the year with a book on New Year's Eve.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
thanks, everyone. And thanks, Donnie, and keep reading
and keep watching.